Jason mentioned we're going to be talking about the ideal of a man as a provider. We have submitted several questions for the week, and Brother Omari and I will be taking turns in dealing with moderating this. But these are the panelists, and this is quite an ensemble. One of these men has been preaching longer than I've been alive. And it ain't Bonner. But Brother Frank Briscoe is a gospel preacher from years back, and I've sat in some of his classes. And, of course, Dink, many people here are very familiar with. Brother Bonner and I work together. I think this is a good panel to be able to deal with this particular subject. And one of the things I would like for us to do, and Dink, I see you have the microphone there, and I probably lean real heavy on Dink. he told me not to lean very heavily on him, but y'all know Dink, so y'all know he's worthy of that.
Apparently, Rick sent out questions to these two gentlemen ahead of time, and I didn't get a copy of those questions, so I'm coming at this kind of cold. Actually, Brother Bonner gave me a copy of the questions this morning when I arrived. So,
well, you're a laborer. These other two are preachers, so we don't labor. So we figured you could answer those questions. All right. I want to get into just some very fundamental, maybe foundational stuff with regards to the ideal. And so, Dink, one of the questions that we have is, what is the essence? We're talking about being a provider. What is the essence of being a provider?
Well, I think, and I can go off on a tangent, so you may have to stop me. But I think when I look at our world, when I look at our society, I think there's two things that have caused the breakdown of this country. And, of course, anytime we get away from God's pattern, it's a wreck, right? One of those, as we've talked about this morning, is the breakdown of the family and so many children being born into single-parent households. And obviously that's contributed greatly to the problem. But I also think it's the breakdown of the work ethic that this country was founded on and built on. Recently, people have been being paid to not work, and they've decided they like that. And, you know, you go in restaurants now, and they're only seating people at half the tables because they can't hire staff and things like that. Well, as Christians, we can't be that way, right? We're supposed to have a strong work ethic. And I was thinking about this yesterday from the standpoint of, when you pick up your Bible and you read the first verse, the God that we serve, the God our Creator, is working, right? He's working in creation. Now, God is omnipotent. How all of that exactly works, and obviously he never gets tired, that sort of thing. But yet, there's no question that he was working. And when you get into Genesis chapter 2, it says that God rested from his labors. He was laboring in creation. And then you go down a little further in chapter 2, about verse 15, and he gave Adam work to do. Adam was to dress and keep the garden. Basically, he was a gardener, a landscaper, if you will. But God gave Adam work immediately. And then I was thinking about the godly men sort of that we hold up as we read through the Old Testament. I'm not going to go through everybody, but just thinking of the first men, you think about Noah. We talked about Noah this morning. Was Noah a worker? Well, if any of y'all have been to Kentucky and seen the ark, I mean, it's unbelievable. And as a kid, I always found it curious that it took him 120 years to build the ark. Well, once I saw that, I have no idea how he and his sons built the ark in 120 years. There's no question they worked. Jacob was brought up this morning, and the fact that he worked for 14 years for Rachel. He was a worker. You think about Moses. Was Moses a worker? Absolutely he was. In fact, his father-in-law in Exodus 18 comes to him and says, look, you're doing too much. You're going to wear yourself out. No man can keep up this pace. You've got to have help. And so we see that pattern of godly men, and the men that God chose were hard workers. I also think, or I don't think, I know we're commanded to work. As Christians, we are commanded to work. And we'll talk, I'm sure, in this panel about what that means. Not all of that is physical labor. There's spiritual labor. There's laboring at home, as we've talked about this morning, as a father. But we are to work. We're to be workers. And if I ask this audience, what is the fourth of the Ten Commandments? Pretty much anybody, everyone in here would say, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. But I want to look at that. Turn, if you will, to Exodus chapter 20. Because there's more to that commandment than just remembering the Sabbath. So if you look at Exodus chapter 20, and let's begin in verse 8. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But here's another part of that commandment. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. God expects us to work every day except on the Lord's day. Again, that may not be at your physical job. You need to be studying your Bible. You need to be raising your family. You need to be a good husband. There's work in the church. Widows and orphans. I mean, look, there's lots of work to be done. But the point is that the 5-day, 8-hour work week is not a biblical concept. We're to work. And certainly you can go to the New Testament, and there are lots of examples of them laboring from the morning until the evening. God's people have always been called to work and to work hard. Unfortunately, the world around us is looking for ways to work less and less. And again, it's not God's pattern, and it ends up in a wreck.
Right. Good. Mr. Mike? Okay. Mr. Frank?
But in speaking concerning the most significant element of being a provider, a husband, a man, you know, we will be looking somewhere along the way at some of the passages of Scripture where God specified the responsibility that the husband has and that the man has. And I want us to be thinking concerning the fact that this was not arbitrary commands. This is what works. It's been mentioned already this morning several different times about the problems that are in our society today. He gave the statistics earlier about the kids that have no parents. I went in a few years ago to an elementary school. I was encouraged to come up for, I don't remember what, but I was in either a third or fourth grade class. There was 21 kids in that class, and I was speaking to the teacher, and of 21 kids, 4 of them lived with a mother and dad. The other 17 lived with one parent, no parent, kin folks. But the point being simply is that somehow or another, the role of provider, of overseeing, you know, of having the responsibility of seeing that there is food, clothing, and shelter, both physical and spiritual, we're losing that. And we don't find that in our society today.
Mike, you want to follow?
Yeah, I appreciate both of them and what they said, them being at it a little longer than I have. Being a provider, before I became a gospel preacher, I worked in the automotive field for about 15 years. And so I know what it means to go on a job every day. But I believe the work I'm doing now is a little tougher. But when we consider providers, we're talking about those who see ahead, those who are laying things aside ahead. And that could be food, clothing, shelter for those whom they have responsibility for. If you look at Exodus chapter 21 and verse number 10, Rick Omari and I used to do a radio show on Fridays, and Omari brought this point out. I thought it was an excellent point years ago. It may have been 5 years ago, if that. But it's interesting. He says, if he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. And if he does not do these things, these three for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. Now, the principle there is that we as men need to be providing for our families. Food, clothing, if you're married, you take care of her from a conjugal perspective. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, as providers, it's not just food, clothing, and shelter. Even though God provides food and clothing, he doesn't promise shelter, but food and clothing and shelter, as men, we need to be providing all of those things for our wives. And the reason why I bring that up, because I know of a situation where a young wife was longing for the conjugal duties and the husband wasn't providing those. Well, that's part of provision, which actually peered into other problems in the marriage. Well, when I think about providing, we're talking about making sure that you have what they need in order for them to prosper. And, of course, that's with their food, their clothing, and the shelter. That's what I want to add.
You know, it's interesting when earlier today when Brother Carey was talking about the names of God, one of them that he brought up was the fact that God is a shepherd. When you look into Psalm 23 and you see the idea of a shepherd there, it is a provider. Now, it's also a protector, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. But notice how it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. That's a provider. Provides the things that are necessary so that there will not be want. It's not everything that I want. The ideal is the needs there, right? These are things that are satisfying. He maketh me, and here's how he does it. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul, leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. There's great provision that is being provided by the shepherd of Psalm 23. And so you have that mentality. God as our Father, God as a provider, he is providing for us the things that are necessary. That's what a provider does. Every now and then you and I'd have this conversation. What does a soldier do? He soldiers, right? What does a preacher do? He preaches. Well, what does a provider do? He provides. That's the essence of a provider, is making sure that the provisions are there.
A few weeks ago, I was in Tennessee. Sister Birdwell, one of the members there, gave Evelyn a plant. And I put that plant up on a hanger. And a few days later, I noticed that there was a bird in there in a nest. Then some eggs, and then those eggs hatched. And then now you see the bird literally flying from different places back to the plant with food in his mouth, providing. Well, if a bird knows how to do that, shouldn't we? Now, here's my point to that. We have too many men today who are making babies but not providing for them.
Try.
And that goes against what God
said.
Yes, sir. Actually, it goes against what Abraham said in Genesis 22 and verse number 8. God will provide for himself a land.
That's right.
Okay. Well, on both sides of that, we have too many men who are not providing. We have too many women who want to have babies but don't want to be mamas. Yep. And I think same thing's true there. We have too many men who want to have babies but don't want to be daddies. And you mentioned the provider and protector. He leads me beside still waters. Did you ever see a sheep try to swim? Mm. You know, why do you take the sheep beside still water? You don't want him down there where it's flooding. He doesn't swim very well. You're protecting him. And this is part of the role of the husband and the man. He is protecting the family. And as we said, God knew what worked best. And when we do it as God planned, the family works well and society works well.
Absolutely.
And otherwise, we look around at the society in which we live. If you picked up a paper this morning, it looks at the Metroplex from where I live, close to Fort Worth. There are any number of murders that have been done by 17, 18-year-old boys. And 90% of those 17, 18-year-old boys don't have a daddy, don't have any kind of guidance, and consequently it's falling apart. I think that when the provider leaves his role, either unable or fails to provide, then the family starts falling apart. And every one of us have dealt with it. The last one that I dealt with, husband, he worked days, wife, she worked nights. And you can imagine what happened. And that's just what we have to see, is that when we don't do it like God says, it's just not going to work. And this is the responsibility that's ours. And it'll fall apart. Not only does it fall apart there, then the children, where do they go? Daddy's working, mama's working. Children go to daycare, not love care. Hmm. They go somewhere where they get basics, and that's all. And then what ends up with them? I think I mentioned to you earlier about Ichabod. The name Ichabod means no glory.
Glory.
And if you back up and look at Ichabod, who was his grandfather? Eli. What kind of man was Eli? And then who was his daddy? Mm-hmm. He was one of Eli's sons who was a base fellow, an adulterer. Mm-hmm. He laid with the women at the temple. And when that little boy was born, of course his mother died, but she named him.
Yep.
Ichabod, no glory. What was his future? He's only mentioned, as far as I know, one other time, and then it's mentioned in regards to a nephew, not him. But can you imagine what he would do as he starts to school? Somebody says, "What's your name?" "My name is No Glory."
Yeah.
He has...
Good
it
point.
It falls back to the father. It falls back to the care that he should have received.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling this second question is going to take us to probably back to Genesis 2 for a little bit. And that is, you hear a lot in today's society about male chauvinist things. The Bible is chauvinistic, things such as that. But why isn't the concept of male leadership chauvinistic?
Number one is a misuse of the word.
Okay.
The word chauvinist means displaying excessive prejudice support for one's own cause or people. And when you look up that definition, then in parenthesis it will say, for example, male looking down upon female. Now, that's not part of the word. That's not part of the meaning. The meaning of the word, as it was originally given, was when someone prejudicial, with prejudice, looks down upon another group. It's used in our society today as a word to put you on defense. If, and this gets back to somebody said I was old, but you remember, I can remember when somebody wanted to get you down. Are you a Camelite? Okay, they were using a term, and they're using it for the specific purpose of putting you on defense. And women use this term chauvinist to put men on defense. It is not really the use of the word. Now, I understand if you look into the Muslim area and all, men do look down upon women. But according to the definition, a woman that gets up and talks about a man being sorry, no good, chauvinist, she is a chauvinist. She is actually guilty of what she's accusing him of doing. And so what we hear, we have an article, a guy writes in Fort Worth paper. He wrote an article not too long ago, felt sorry for the Apostle Paul because he didn't know what he was talking about. And he got on to him for being a chauvinist, male chauvinist. Look at the condition of women at the day that Paul was writing and the New Testament came, and look at what they did for women. There's nothing any farther from the truth than to accuse the New Testament of in any way being male chauvinist. Because if it did more for women than probably anything, even in society, than anything that had come along at the time. So it's a misuse of the term, and it's used strictly to put men on the defensive and kind of look down at them.
Very good point.
Well, I don't see it being chauvinistic because, number one, we're talking about order. And so 1 Corinthians 11, first couple of verses there, we know that man is over the woman. If man is loving his wife like he's supposed to, then that's not really going to be an issue. Number two, in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 13, it's in the notes that I provided, we understand that Adam was the chief man, protos there. He's number one. Again, God puts upon him the attitude that he ought to have toward the woman. Now, I've been pondering this for the last couple of days, and I was thinking the true chauvinist is the homosexual. You think about that. The true chauvinist is the homosexual man who wants another man and then has that man to be his wife. That's chauvinistic, and vice versa. So if you're not careful and you listen to what the devil says and you think that the devil have a good point, you got problems. Devils don't have good points. God has the point. And so when we stop and we think about this, is male leadership in the home chauvinistic? No. Actually, it provides and protects, and it's the best plan. And truth be told, why aren't more men resorting to the plan that God has given? And so when they go about doing it their own way, we see all this mass confusion. And that's what we see.
Yeah, I would just sort of echo that, and it's, you know, it's a common device of Satan to erode distinctions that God has put in place, to erode roles that God has put into place. You think about gender right now. Gender's being eroded. There's no difference. It's a spectrum. There's no man and female or male and female. There is just spectrum of different genders. Well, the same thing with like feminism, for instance. That is an attempt to erode the roles that God has set in place. The husband is the head of the wife. That is established by God. And it's an attempt to erode the roles that God has set up. How can the roles that God set up be chauvinistic? We have different roles, not different values, but we have different roles. We all accept that Christ is the head of the church readily. We don't argue about that. Well, then why do we argue that about the husband being the head of the wife? Again, it's God ordained. It's how God designed it. And it's a common tactic of Satan to try to erode those things.
You know, it's interesting when you think about role versus value. That's really what we're talking about here. Intrinsically, there's nothing different in between a male and a female in regards to that. You see that in Galatians chapter 3 with regards to salvation. It's offered to both male and female. But when it comes to the role of leadership in a home, and every institution and every activity of life has some form of role associated with it. In this case, the order of creation has something to do with the role and the responsibility. Adam being created first, 1 Timothy chapter 2, I think, what is it, verse number 13 and following, him being created first. You know, the work of man as well as the role of man, and that's really what we've been talking about in this regards, is situated out of creation. It's not situated in the curse. It was before the curse. Man working, God gave him that responsibility, as you mentioned earlier, Dink. He gave him that responsibility in chapter 2. The curse does not come about to chapter 3, the sin. And so that's how a lot of people, women were placed under men's leadership because of the curse. No, it had nothing to do with that. That came later, but the role was given by the order of creation. And so both of those play a part in both being a provider and the role itself. And I love what you said about the word itself in regards to sometimes we allow them to establish the perimeters of the discussion and we've already lost the debate. So very good. Our next question, I want to make sure we get through a couple of these. What is the relationship of the protector role in being a provider?
You know, I've been thinking about this too, and it caused me to think about Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 4, and we know that in the building of the wall, the men had the responsibility of protecting their families. Well, in this particular case, if you look at Nehemiah chapter 4, verse number 13 and 14, he said, "Therefore I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the opening, and I set the people according to their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles, to the leaders, and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. And I think about the protector and the provider. You have a sword in one hand and a hammer in the other hand. And as a protector, we have to have the mentality that I'm going to protect my family. As a provider, I have to go out and I have to work and make sure that my family has what they need. And so it's both. And so when we think about the relationship between the two, they go hand in hand. You can't separate the two. I was talking to the college students on Monday night. We had them over. And for some reason, some younger in this generation have the idea that it's all right for, I guess, men to be to ransack your house and your wife. I guess you're going to look at them and in the name of Jesus, do nothing. Well, that's foolish. You're dying, go to hell. Why? Because we have the responsibility as the strong man, and even Jesus said that you can't spoil his house unless you bind the strong man. Well, you're supposed to be the strong man in your home. So what are you going to do? Just let him come in and just ransack? No, you protect your home. But that's what you do, you protect. So when a man is protecting his home, he's doing that not just physically, but also spiritually. You have to watch, as you're protecting your home, what your family is viewing, whether online, on television, what they're listening to, the radio. We used to tell our children all the time, we're trying to keep you as pure as possible because the things that you take in at a young age, you got to deal with at an older age. So protection is not just protecting their physicality, but also protecting their minds, their soul.
Well, I like the idea that you mentioned there of protection. We think of it, first of all, physical, you know, protecting from physical harm. But the man's role, he also has a responsibility of protecting them and offering them shield and protection from the effects of the world.
That's right.
And from the things that Satan is going to do. So there's that aspect of protection that we need to remember.
I go back to Ephesians 5, you know, that we're to love our wives as Christ loved the church, and Christ gave his life for the church. And I think implied there is that we have to protect our wife, we have to protect our families. To add on to Mike's example of nature with the bird providing for its family, look, we see animals, and the majority of the time, it's the male that is the protector. You think of the lion and his pride. I see it with cattle. I raise cattle. The bull will always be the first one. You know, if there's a coyote or something, the bull's going to be the first one out there confronting that threat. It's God's design that the male is the protector of the family. That's not to say that the wife is not. Certainly, wives are protective of their offspring. We see that in nature as well. We've got a pet deer at our place, and there was a coyote in front of the house. She's got little fawns, and she ran it off. I mean, she chased this coyote. And so it's a role of parents with regards to their children, but it's the role of the husband as far as the family, the wife, and the children to be a protector.
All right. In fact, you cannot be, it would be impossible to be a provider if you cannot protect what you have provided for them. If someone's always coming in and taking that which you have provided, then you're not providing for your family at all. And so these two, as you mentioned, they go hand in hand. Next question. Let's deal with, question number five, gentlemen, and that is the role of the provider. And I think we might have even covered this, so we might deal with this real quickly, but how important is it? I mean, what are we talking about as far as level of importance here?
Well, as I heard it a little bit, but when the role of the provider breaks down, everything begins to break down. I mean, when he doesn't take care of the responsibility that is his, food, clothing, and shelter, somebody has to. And more often than not, it'll become the wife. And when she has to step in and start being part of the provider, there's conflict.
By the way, let's build off of that and look at that next question, because I think the next question feeds into that, and that is, in what ways are the male provider being challenged today? How is it being challenged today?
Two ways. They're being challenged, one, because they're not assuming the responsibility they should, and we just have a society of, I don't know what the women's lib, was that what it was called? That are challenging men and challenging their role. And unfortunately, in many areas, men are backing off and letting women have it. Consequently, a lot of things are not being taken care of as they should. We need to recognize that there is a difference in the way that men and women make their decisions and make their plans. You put a bunch of little boys out on the playing ground and decide to play a great game, and the first thing they do is say, let's set the rules. You set a bunch of little girls out there, and the first thing they do is try to figure out how not to hurt somebody's feelings. You know, it's not rules. And consequently, we see that in the roles that they're taking in our government today and in society, that they are not really wanting rules. They're trying to just kind of smooth everything over. So there is a challenge out there.
I think one of the challenges that I've seen and experienced is Romans 12, 1 and 2, being conformed to the world. The world today seems to believe that the man is supposed to provide half, protect half. Everything is 50-50. And I had to talk to a few men, like, it's not 50-50. Boy, it's on you. And that's the bottom line. It's on you. That's your position that God gave you. Now, if your wife want to work outside the home, that's fine, Proverbs 31, but it's still on you. It's on you to protect and to provide. So how are the provider roles being challenged today? I would say Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed because of lack of knowledge. The reason why I bring that up is because I'm talking to young men all the time, especially leaving home, coming to Angelo, and they have no idea what it means to be a man. You got to... Let me calm down.
No,
I have to, because when you shake a young man's hand and it feel like a fish, that's a problem. And I taught my sons early in life, shake a man's hand, look him in the eye, and squeeze his hand. Well, you would think to have nothing to do with this question. It has everything to do with it. And so we're dealing with what men are not doing at home, and we're seeing the results of it in their sons. And so what do? You call him a pansy? No, you help him. And so now you got young men actually developing and saying, you know what, I appreciate you shaking my hand with some passion, with some strength. Well, so it's a lot of things challenging the male role, because even my own sons-in-laws take talking to them in the beginning, like, son, you're the provider. Now, it's all right that your wife make a little bit more money than you. That's fine. However, you're still the man. You have the final say, and it's not yes, ma'am, or yes, dear. It's not that. Be the man. If you're not being disrespectful, you love your wife, even as Christ loved the church. But those are some of the ways that we're being challenged today. And even when our children are younger, our girls, well, mom, why does dad have to have the final say all the time? Baby, because that's the way God instituted it. But my wife will still say, okay, this is what I think we ought to do, and these are the reasons why. Am I being challenged? Well, in one way I am, but for the better. And so another way that the male provider role is being challenged, you got men that think they have all the answers, but they don't know what they're talking about. And you got a wife that can help them, but they won't let her help.
It's tough to follow.
I was just going to say again, it's an attempt to blur the roles. its attempt to feminize men so that men and women are equal in all ways. Again, it's just getting away from the roles that God has set up as goal, as God has designed them. I did want to just add one thing to the last thing we talked about, because we sort of talked about it as if it was just physical protector, that the husband is just the physical protector of the family. I hope everyone understands that all three of us mean that to say that we also protect them spiritually, right? From false teachers, from friends who may be bad influences, from sin. So it's not just physical protection, but it's spiritual protection as well.
Ephesians 6:4, we're going to bring them up. Right.
The nurture and admonition of the Lord. Proverbs, 4:23, we're going to guard our hearts and we're going to help to guard their hearts by building them up.
Say that our society is challenging us. In Stephenville, where I'm at, 2 weeks ago, we've got a man lives there in town who dresses like a woman. Periodically, he comes to church. He'll attend services. I don't know why he comes. I don't know whether he's listening, but I do know he's waiting to see if we're going to challenge him. We had one come in on the other side, and he was challenged, and he said, I'm exercising my Second Amendment right, or whichever one of them it is. But we're being challenged that way to see what we're going to do. Getting ahead, we're going to be talking about this later. In some of the things that older ones have seen. But it's a challenge. It's out there. People are deliberately seeing how far they can go. There is a difference between men and women. You know, we all hear things about opposites attract. And there's a difference between men and women, and there's a difference between their roles. There are things that man does and can do that no women can do. There are things that women can do that no man can do. There's not one role more important than the other. And the other thing, when somebody questions this, especially some women come up and talk about, where in the Bible does it tell the wife to be willing to lay down her life for her husband? And when she wants to say, well, the man, you know, male chauvinist, he's supposed to lay down his life for the wife. Does she have the same responsibility? And would she?
All right. Let's look at this then. What does it mean to teach, or how should we, what should we be teaching our young boys, our teenagers, to be the providers? What if we're lacking all of these things, where do we need to go in order to help educate and do better?
I'll say something and let Mike do it, but I think one of the first places that we fail is we don't explain and point out enough to a young man that wants to get married, if he can't provide for a wife and family, he's not ready to get married. And preachers don't need to be performing weddings for a guy that says, I don't have a job and I can't provide, but I'm going to someday.
Let me pause you there. We got a lot of preachers here. Is that your first question in counseling, premarital? Can you provide for this young lady that you're taking underneath your wings? That's probably a pretty good question to be asking. Are you ready to be a provider for this
provide,
home?
They're not ready to be married. That may be a little harsh.
But I think that's that. This is one of the questions I ask. Are you ready to lead a wife to heaven? Because if you're not faithful, we told our daughter straight up, like, don't bring no heathens to our house. We don't want them there. Now, that may sound ugly, but it's true, because why would I want my daughter to have a man that can't even pray? Well, when we think about what does it mean to teach boys, teens, and men to become providers, number one, they ought to be able to see it in their father. And I used to tell my sons all the time, just watch me. Right, Mike? Watch me. You watch me. Why? Because I'm watching my father. I'm watching his son. And so in my notes, I gave Proverbs 1, 8, 2, 1, 3, 1, all those. And all of those were Solomon talking to his son Rehoboam, teaching him what he ought to be doing. You go to Proverbs 31, you have the opposite. You have a mother teaching her son. This is what you ought to be doing. This is what you ought to be looking for, per se. And so when I think about these things, I learned this from Mike. We was talking one time, Colossians 3:24. When you think of a good work ethic, it's no way that our boys should leave our house not knowing how to push a broom, a rake, push a lawnmower. That should not ever happen. But it is. Why? Because men are dropping the ball. So, young men, if you want to get married, get your stuff in order. If you have children, don't be taking it easy on them to the point where you don't give them no chores. You might as well do what the rest of the world is doing right now, send them paychecks without working. That's a sin. You will die and go to hell. For real. Because if a man doesn't work, neither shall he eat. And we got a lot of people who their stomach ought to be reaching their back right now. They ought to go hungry because they're not working. And so we ought to sit there and watch them eat your steak right in front of them. Why? Because they're not working. And so we need to teach them how to provide in that. Y'all probably won't invite me back, but that's fine.
No, we don't invite you back. We're
going to go that. No. Deep.
Well, here at BCS, we're currently studying the book of Genesis, and Brother Terrence is teaching that. And he made what I thought was a wonderful point, especially for you young men, with regards to being prepared to be married. And he made the point that Adam had a job, he had a home, and he had a relationship with God. And Brother Terrence made the point, I'm not going to marry you if you don't have a job, a home, and a relationship with God. So don't come ask me to do your wedding. And I think that's such a good lesson for us that we have to prepare to be married. As men, we have to be prepared to be a husband, to be a provider before we enter into that marriage covenant. And so I thought it was just a great point of preparing yourself to be a husband, so that you're ready to be all of the things that we're talking about today.
You know, God knew that we had certain needs and made certain provisions for us in regards to that. And some of those needs were physical and some of those needs were spiritual. He knew that we needed to grow spiritually. So through that, he provided spiritual or things that would help us to grow spiritually. Some of those, by the way, we might not like. James chapter 1 talks about going through trials, tribulations, that would incur patience on us and would help us to grow to be the kind of men that we ought to grow. When you look at Proverbs 27:17, the Bible talks about iron sharpening iron. Now, if you go back just to Deuteronomy chapter 6, the role of a parent is to be that iron that goes to the example and goes to the, being prepared for that. But if you're not the iron, and that's the very first word that Moses utilizes there in regards to parents when he says, and thou shalt teach. That role is not the norm, or that word is not the normal word for teach. It's not the generic word for teach that I just set down with instruction. It's the same word used in Proverbs 27:17. It's the same word used by Isaiah when he says, when I sharpen or I whet the glistening sword. That's the role of a father. The role of a parent is to whet that glistening sword of his son to be a provider and to be a protector of that home. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Whoa, that's loud. Thank you very much for the panel. You know, you think about what's going on today, and I'm telling you, these bums that you see on the side of the road, and we'll have brethren just give them money. Why don't you tell them to get a job? And I thought about that as you're doing this. And another problem that was also addressed here is obviously not that a woman can't do certain things. We know there's principles that she can. But when did the home start falling apart? After World War II, When these women started going to work all the time instead of staying home doing what they're supposed to do and taking care of their families, I'm going to tell you something. We talk about sissy boy preachers this morning. We have a lot of sissy boy preachers and brethren, 1 Timothy 5, Titus chapter 2, 1 Timothy chapter 2, that have disregarded what the Bible teaches on the role of women, and hence, as a result, they're not the providers they ought to be. But we're done. Let's take a break.